Hi everyone, we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winshaw. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right, you ready for this? We have a bunch of stuff to talk about, and we're going to start with a scoop that we had this morning. It is the Texas Gigafactory, or maybe Terra Factory now, apparently. We're not exactly sure, but we have a good source, reliable source that has delivered for us in the past that tell us that Tesla has locked down Austin, Texas, or at least that the greater Austin, Texas. It probably won't be in city limit, but it's going to be the closest big center around the factory for the next factory location. So now, let me be clear to start with. We're not talking about the whole, well, we're going to talk about it later, but this is not related to the whole Tesla moving its operation from California to Texas and Nevada. This is the factory that Elon previously announced, that he referred to it as the Cybertruck Gigafactory, and that this like central US factory. This is more of what we were talking about than all the moving California stuff. We can get into that too later on. But what we hear is that Elon Musk has decided that this is going to be the next place. They haven't locked down the actual location, apparently, because Texas and the greater Austin area, they have given them a few options on the location. So there might be something another to that in the near future. But Elon already tasked his his engineering team at Gigafactory Nevada to start the process for all the procurement process and everything for the new factory, and they were told that it's going to be in Austin, Texas. So they had to tell him that for the procurement reason, like for them to lock down some contractors and things like that. They need to know where it's going to be. Yeah. And they also need to know when it's going to be. And that's probably the most exciting part of this report here. The source said that Tesla is aiming to have cars rolling out of that factory by the end of this year, which sounds insane.
That does sound insane. It's May, and yeah, they haven't picked a spot yet.
Yes. However, so the comparison, of course, will always come back to the Gigafactory Shanghai, which was also built on an extremely fast timeline. Tesla had started construction in January and had cars coming out in October, at least late October, something like that. But the cars were more, the percentage of the parts were higher at Shanghai than what they are aiming to do for this year in Texas. They are only talking, based on our source, of having the general assembly ready by that time. So it's the general assembly line has been a bottleneck for Tesla at times. They have things nailed down pretty good for the body of the car, especially the Model Y had a lot of body improvements. We'll talk about the mega casting things in the back and stuff like that. So what we hear is that Tesla is still going to make those in Fremont for now and then assemble, ship that to the new factory in Texas for a general assembly line ready by the end of this year. So they want cars coming out of it in December. And when I say cars, I mean the Model Y. So I think that might indicate that Tesla is having some issues ramping up in Fremont. So we knew that Fremont was already being crowded, and now they needed a new general assembly line for the car. So with the Model 3 being produced there and everything, I know that they still want to ramp up production in Fremont, and Model Y will still come out of Fremont for a while. But I think they felt the need to have another production site coming up soon for Model Y demand in the US and North America in general. Because as you remember, we've been talking about the fact that Model Y is like the first car that Tesla is going to introduce in different markets, one that can be produced in those markets too, like in Europe with Gigafactory Berlin, in China with Gigafactory Shanghai. So I think this is a very interesting development here. But then Tesla would, of course, keep building around that general assembly line, the factory, to have more parts being produced there. Likely the whole Model Y body and everything else. But also, of course, the Cybertruck should be produced at the same site. But my understanding right now is that the aim is going to be to have the Model Y there first in production, which makes sense because that will basically finance the factory. If you can already get out the Model Y, there's already a market for it. They can just crank that up and then use the revenue from that to keep building around the factory and eventually have the Cybertruck there, which we've been hearing about the Cybertruck probably having a significantly lower capital expenditure needed to bring it to production. So that will help Tesla. Well, yeah, a lot of people excited about Austin, right?
Yeah, I mean, Austin's a great place. And we kind of talked about it previously. Like, it makes the most sense. There's the University of Texas at Austin, which is like a huge, huge school. You got a lot of smart people, Apple, Google. I think just about everybody's down there. Even Samsung, I think, has a big chip factory there. So they've got everything. Mm-hmm. And I think Tesla even has some folks in Austin, right?
Yeah, that's in an article. Tesla already has some connection to Austin through the basically, I don't know if you can say that their Autopilot hardware group is based in Austin, but they have a lot of engineering from that group based in Austin. And that's originated really from Tesla having recruiting Jim Keller when he was at AMD. He was apparently working at AMD out of their corporate office in Austin, where they have a bunch of chip engineers there. And then Keller just went on a hiring spree on all the chip engineers in Austin. And so Tesla just, instead of having those people move to California, which is a hard sell for a lot of engineers. You see a lot of engineers moving from California to Texas, but not a lot the other way around because of course, taxes and just the cost of living being so much lower in Texas. So Tesla figured that they're just going to open an engineering office in Austin to get those engineers instead of trying to convince them to move, which I think makes a ton of sense, really.
Yeah, and you know, Texas with its lower taxes, it's gonna be lower overhead, you know, per Model Y. So theoretically, that should cut the cost of the Model Y, you know, a little bit. I just like it doesn't seem realistic that they haven't even picked a spot yet, and they expect to have things rolling.
But apparently, they already have the spots. Like the options like, what, are already there.
Two or three spots.
I don't have an actual number on it, but I'm told that they were offered some locations, and now it's just up to them to like pick one. But they already can start the process with what they have now, finding the contractors and everything, because they do know, at least in the general area, where it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but do you think that? You know, Elon's talk about moving the headquarters to Texas, you know, it would seem more likely that they would move it to the same general area as the factory.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Like, let's dive into that. Like, let's get everybody up to date first, because like it's related, and it happened just after the last week's podcast sort of unfolded over the weekend and Friday. After basically, in short, Tesla, the comments from the governor from last week that we reported on, Elon basically took them as an authorization for them to restart production, even though the governor was always saying, yes, we are opening up things, we are issuing new guidelines for manufacturing to restart, but it's up to the local counties to implement the new guidelines on their own timelines and with additional guidelines if they need to and everything. But Elon was like, nah, the governor says that. We're just going to start the factory, restart the factory anyway. And then Alameda County, where Fremont Factory is located, was like, no. You have to issue a plan first for the reopening, specifically for the Fremont Factory plant. And apparently some of the issue that came out of that was due to Tesla already having submitted the plan, and they felt like, we have a plan, it's submitted, but apparently the plan was based on what Tesla did at other locations like Shanghai and Nevada and other location, also in California and other counties where they have like their foraging facilities and other stuff like that. But the county needed a plan specific to Fremont Factory, and Tesla didn't submit one with that matched their specific guideline. And apparently there was some frustration from Elon Musk on that front, and he felt like the county was illegally preventing them from opening despite the order from the governor, which that is just plain not true, because the governor always said that was up to the county. But anyway, and then he did that announcement that that was the last straw. I think that was the word he used. That right. was the last straw, and that they're gonna move California. At first, it just said headquarters, which is one thing. But then he even talked about potentially even moving the production and manufacturing capacity that they have there, which is massive. I mean, it's Fremont Factory and a bunch of other operation around it. And he said that, like, he said something like, "We need to be treated right if they want us to keep that stuff there," which I
find is kind of weird because you know, his beef was like with this one particular person, or you could say Alameda County. Because like he didn't have a problem with the Fremont mayor, he didn't have a problem with Palo Alto mayor, mm-hmm. which is where the actual headquarters is.
Mm-hmm.
A headquarters isn't even in Alameda County. And he didn't have a problem with the governor. The governor said, "Open up stuff," you know.
Yeah, but he misrepresented to the comments of the governor. He said, like, the governor said we could open it. The governor never right. said that. Like, he was very careful. Like, Gavin Newsom is a politician to the core. Like, he talks like a politician. He was very careful with his words. And he did have this little thing where, like, for 2 minutes, he went on a, like, super supportive Tesla rant. But at the end, he was still always like, but it's up for the county to do whatever they want.
Right. Yeah, and so, I mean, it seems kind of weird for Elon to be upset with the state of California when it seems like his particular beef was with this one particular agency.
I think what he means is like the governor could intervene technically with an executive order and just override what the county is doing.
Right.
So that might be his issue, but there's no way that Newsom's going to do that.
Yeah. And so what do you think about him actually... Do you think there was any foresight into, you know, maybe Texas Governor Abbott had already discussed with Elon moving? I know after the tweets, there was a discussion, a public discussion where Abbott acknowledged having a discussion with Elon about moving and saying mm-hmm. that he was upset with California and he was mm-hmm. happy, you know, excited about Texas. But do you think... You know, they had had discussions previous to that saying, you know, like, hey, this is a great deal, you know, this place, big place in Austin, but maybe, you know, you want to even move some of your headquarters here, offset a lot of taxes. And Elon was like, okay, let me think about that. And then this thing came up and he's like, wow, Texas is like courting us and they're opening up everything. And California is, you know, blockading us and they're, you know, closed everything. Maybe we should just move everything over to Texas.
Yeah, know. That might be part of it. Like maybe they got this deal in Austin, and then he went to the governor. He's like, "Yo, let's just copy this deal for whatever production we bring from Fremont and maybe our headquarters." One, yeah, that makes sense. Maybe that's it. But it wasn't a good move at all because like he has 20,000 employees in California. Like all those people feel like maybe I'm sure some of them will be okay to move to Texas or anything like that, but also a lot of them are like, no, my family's here and everything. Like I'm not gonna move. So like they feel their job is threatened by this. So it's already a hyper stressful time for so many people. I feel like that comment wasn't a good move at all.
Nope.
And he did a few other weird moves like that this week with then they started production anyway, despite the county's order. And then Elon was like, you just come arrest me if you have to, just don't arrest my employees, anything like that, which of course they weren't going to do. Like they know how it looks like it's right. never going to happen. It was never even a possibility.
Although it would have been entertaining if it did.
Yes. But Elon was like setting up, well, a lot of people took issue with me calling it a martyr trap, but I stand by it. Yeah. Like it sounded like that to me because he knows he's not going to get arrested. The county knows how bad that would look and how it would just play into his hand. So, and then a bunch of people are like, oh, Elon won because of that. Like he won, he didn't get arrested and everything like that. First of all, he didn't actually win anything because what we hear from the county now is that they approved the plan to reopen the factory if they do some of the changes to their guideline, including things like the employee being screened before they get into the shuttles to get to the factory instead of at the factory itself. And they have also some they want that to happen by May 18th. So they have a different timeline than Elon. Elon wanted it to be open by the May 8th, I think. So 10 days difference. That's what really did this whole mess. That was 10 days too many. And Elon kept hammering the fact that, oh, yeah, but all the other automakers are allowed to reopen right now. And I think he's right to a degree because he said allowed to. But most of them decided to open on May 18th too. So they were actually just all going to open on the same timeline, which gives everyone more time to establish those safety measures, which we hear that are not being respected that much right now inside the factory in terms of social distancing. And of course, on the actual assembly line, there's sometimes where there's just no way to keep that 6 feet apart. Yeah. But even like in meetings and things like that, apparently Tesla is not too keen on the 6 feet apart thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Not a good look.
So it feels like he has won the battle, which is like to get the car started, although it sounded like they were going to get started on the 18th anyway, just like mm-hmm. Chevy and Ford. So, you know, he bought himself a few days of extra, and that's not small, like a few days is big. But the general consensus among our readers, you know, ourselves, our readers, Tesla fans, I feel like, you know, he's sown so much bad blood in the past 2 weeks over the opening early that I think a lot of people are just going to be like, you know what? I was kind of a fringe Musk fan. I'm a fringe Tesla fan. This is something that kind of put me on the other side of the fence. I can see that. I was certainly like, I was not impressed by the way he handled things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to sell my Teslas any earlier than I would have otherwise. I'm probably still going to get a Model Y at some point. Not soon, but, you know, like I don't feel great about it. Like it's definitely a downer for me.
It doesn't really change my opinion of Tesla itself. I mean, it's more, I feel like Elon is driving a lot of those moves, unfortunately. And I'm still a fan of Elon. I think he's a genius individual and everything. It's just that sometimes he just get off the deep end, really. And it's not the first time we've seen him do a strange series of moves, like last year with the whole, like closing all the stores and things like that, and then reverting it and everything. It's not the first time that it's been the case. But this one is one that's more, I feel like he keeps digging deeper and deeper into it, which might be a good segue into our super fan thing. Cause that was another big article that we posted this week. It was an op-ed really, an opinion. That's not it. It was an opinion piece. Title, where's my open here? All right. Tesla super fandom becomes toxic, negative for electric revolution.
And this one's been brewing for a while. It just didn't happen this week. It was kind of...
Yeah, that actually, it was pre-pandemic too. Like I started working on this by maybe like just right before the pandemic started in the U.S. And I started seeing this for a while now with Elon... keep retweeting those same people on Twitter, keep interacting with the same super fans on Twitter. And it sort of created like I feel like it's corrupting his feedback loop, which exists unfortunately mainly on Twitter. And these fans just agreeing with everything he says. And then this pandemic happens. And it doubled down everything because if he kept relying on those same people that were agreeing with everything he said anyway, it didn't matter if it was wrong. And we knew for a fact that he was wrong about a bunch of things in this pandemic, including like the April, no new cases by April, or even spreading misinformation like the Bakersfield doctors and anything like that. So those same super fan who have proven I've been spreading misinformation before. I mean, I talk about the Vincent guy that literally promoted a fraud to get Tesla, false Tesla reservation in China, and then lied about me stealing his content, even though I have full proof that I didn't. Those are the same group that are sort of known as the Tesla Third Row podcast.
Did you say third or third?
Third, like the number three.
All right. I thought you were okay.
And they are all part of that podcast. And apparently, Vincent took offense at me linking him to the podcast, and he walked away from the podcast since for some reason that I don't know. I've showed in the article a bunch of example of the Third World podcast feeding Elon Musk misinformation and Elon Musk confirming getting it. I think the best example was the Lorena Gonzalez. She's a state representative for California for San Diego. And I thought it was the worst one. She's the one that said F Elon Musk after the whole quit, leaving California thing. And of course, I don't endorse saying things like that. I know a bunch of people have been...
And that's dumb. That's not just me and it's dumb.
Yeah, it was a dumb thing to say. And she's admitted right away like she shouldn't use that kind of language and everything. She was frustrated with Elon Musk, which again, I get. I'm not excusing her saying that. I get it. But what happened next is so what happened if you say that? If you say F you, Elon Musk, you just branded yourself as anti-Elon, anti-Tesla. And as soon as you do that, Third Row Tesla podcast and all those crazy fans that Elon Musk they try to destroy you. That's what they do. And in this case, they try to paint her at this oil shill that voted on some technically what they did is they said she took money from the oil industry, which is technically right. Although you have to put it in context that the oil industry gave money to everyone basically in politics. That's just what they do. They try to buy everyone. And in her case, they didn't really try to buy her because if you look at the actual, listing of her top contributors, the oil industry lists second to last. I mean, they gave her $26,000 over millions that she got. So it's really nothing. What they claim to link that, to our voting record on the oil industry, which that's what Elon commented on when they posted that series of tweet, which he found interesting. But they completely misrepresented our voting record on the oil industry. So he's actually pretty strong on regulating the oil industry. And the specific thing the attacked her on was for delaying a specific bill about preventing oil drillings within a certain distance of schools. And they say she delayed that bill, which she did to put some amendments on it. And then she actually voted for the bill and was one of the proponents of the bill. So they completely misrepresented her position on it. So Elon Musk now, unless he read this article or something else, he think that this woman is, an oil shill. And that's why she's going after him, which is completely not true. Actually, if anything, and to show that I've been fair on her, I'm not completely defending her. If she has a reason to be anti-Tesla and anti-Elon Musk, is more about her union roots. If you look in her background, she was a union organizer before being a politician, and she's been extremely pro-union and has done a bunch of things for that in the state legislation in California. And after she said F you, Elon Musk, she went on a rant about how Tesla treats their employees and how they are anti-union and everything. So I think that's more, and that's fair to a degree. Tesla has been somewhat anti-union and Elon Musk too in Fremont. So if there's a reason for her to hate Tesla, I think it's more that than being an oil shill for sure. But anyway, I presented this idea that we need to be careful about this, super fandom around Tesla and about maybe even around Elon Musk in particular, maybe more. Because by doing that, by allowing those super fans to be to represent the feedback loop that Tesla's, that especially Elon has been using on Twitter, which I think it's a big part of the feedback loop that Tesla use in general, they are corrupting it, just reinforcing everything that Elon thinks in the moment and tweets and everything. So that, I think, would kill a big part of what has made Tesla great. So that's all I'm presenting here. So I'm saying we should keep that in check. And also at the end of the article, if you guys want to read it, I bring up potential solution to clean up or communication around this thing. And specifically, if you're familiar with Don Miguel Ruiz's FAR agreement about good communication, be impeccable with your words, don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and always do your best. I think if we follow all those principles, we'll be a lot better. Of course, Third Row Podcast didn't really agree with me on that, because as soon as I posted the article, they just sent me a flurry of insults and whatnot. And since then, two people have quit the podcast because they don't. My understanding is because they didn't agree with the series of tweet that with insult that they did, which I appreciate. Both Vincent and Galley to walk away, even though Vincent never apologized for what he did to me. But anyway, still a good move on his part, I think.
Yeah, and we've had Galley on even this podcast before, so
yeah,
clearly fans of his. Should we talk about, like, I don't know if we should talk about Omar. Is that something that we should get into?
I mean, like, I think Omar might probably the one that has been tweeting those insults to me, because why we talk about the Third Row Podcast in general is because they told you, actually specifically on Twitter, when you asked them what were you talking to, and the Third Row Podcast claimed to be talking for all the members of them, and they even listed them and everything. But then when I asked all those members, are you all in agreement that it's okay to call me all the names that they called me during the follow-up of the article, basically no one owned up to it. Like, no one said, oh, I didn't say it personally, but no one like condemned everything that the podcast says. I'm all right. So Galileo Russell, his last name?
Yeah, Hyperchange.
Hyperchange. People know him as Hyperchange. He was the one that said, no, I don't agree with that. And that's why he quit the podcast too. So kudos to him for that. And then Vincent just said he quit the podcast without saying much more. But I talked to Sofian, who claims to be the founder of the podcast, if I'm understanding correctly. And without saying that he said those words, he took responsibility for them and apologized. So okay for that. But my understanding is that he never wanted to say that he said it, because he didn't say it, and that the other guy was Omar Kwesi, I think is his name. Omar Kwesi, yep, went on this rant saying everything, and the reason why they don't want to admit that it's him, well, either he's a coward and he doesn't want to admit that he's insulting people behind the cover anonymity on Twitter, but and that on top of the fact that he's actually banned for life from Twitter because he had this other like Tesla Truth account that went and
or Steve Jobs Ghost is what
he called. Also known as Steve Jobs Ghost. And he harassed a bunch of people on Twitter, and he told people to email and call.
He was doxing people.
Like, yeah.
It was a pretty straightforward ban, like lifetime ban. So basically, it seems like Third Row Podcast knowingly has a ban for life Twitter person running
their Twitter account.
Their Twitter account, which is...
And using it to insult and harass people, including me, including that Lorena woman. And they know that if they admit that Omar has been behind some of those attacks, they know that they could lose their Twitter account, and they see that as like their way to talk to Elon Musk and whatnot. So I'm like, all right.
Right.
I'm not necessarily going after the account. Like, I'm just like, own up to it, Omar and whatever, and if Third Row Podcast was smart about it, they would kick him out, though, because like he's clearly like a bad apple here. But anyway, they don't want to do that. Fine. I'm just putting it out there. Let's be wary of this super fandom thing that's been pushing this idea that Tesla and Elon Musk can do no wrong and they're always right, which is, of course, not the case, even though I'm a super fan of Tesla, really. It's just that I can also see when admit when they do something wrong.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, when they do something wrong, it's like, hey, you're thinking about cutting all your retail staff and getting like Tesla needs like you need a good feedback loop. You need like people saying, hey, dude, that's a crazy thing to do right now. Like, you need that feedback loop. I feel like we're even bigger Tesla fans, because we could go around and say, yeah, Elon's right.
And doesn't help anyone doing that.
Doesn't help Tesla. Like, it doesn't help Elon. Like, so, you know, I would say we're even bigger fans in that respect, because like we'll say, hey, Elon, you're wrong about this. And he'll be like, screw you guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then he brought back retail. So,
yeah, that was an example of or like I do believe that our critical reporting at that time, which Elon clearly saw because he called me anti-Tesla at that time, I do think it had a positive impact on Tesla. Even like people keep bringing up the toilet paper stuff. I'm like, get over it. Yes, the headline was a little bit clickbaity, of course, because
that's entertaining.
That is entertaining. That made people read the article. And if you actually read, if you can get over the fact that there's a clickbait on the headline here with the toilet paper and you actually read the article, first of all, the clickbait was actually accurate because it did happen. But the article goes much deeper into the extent of the cost cutting procedure that Tesla put in place at that time that was extremely severe with them reviewing everything. So people were freaking out. And yes, that it had that the toilet paper thing. Some people didn't reorder the toilet paper in one of the stores. That was one of example of several others that included Tesla not paying anymore for people washing the car, as an example for the delivery. They're like, all right, let's stop paying people to wash the car. Let's just bring the car back home at our place and wash them herself. Like a bunch of things like that was important that Tesla ended up rectifying after that article. So there's always more than what people can see.
Yeah, and I would even so like you got a lot of complaints about when you complained about Tesla raising lowering the price on the performance Model 3, which was like, you know, as soon as Tesla ran out of back orders, they lowered the price. Like, why would you give a huge, why would you make all your fans who put down money and have money in your accounts for like a year or two, why would you make them pay more than the people who are just lining up afterwards?
Yeah, that was fair criticism, I think, in my opinion. A lot of people, like, they were, okay, it's not fair criticism anymore because it happened to me directly. Like, I was affected by it directly because I bought a Model 3 Performance. So people saw it, like, you're just complaining and whining. I'm like, okay, but is my criticism fair, though? Like, look at that. And actually, Elon agreed that it was fair and offered a discount. Like, so I don't even
know. But
that
pissed off more people than anything
else. Yeah, people said that I forced him to. Like, how did I force him to? All I did is complain, which I'm allowed to. I can't do it. Like, it's not.
And frankly, every single one of our readers that had a Tesla Model 3 Performance thanked us.
Oh, so like people, like a bunch of people, like you said, Fred, everybody hates you for that. No, like everybody that I thought wasn't fair on hate neither because of the super fandom thing, they are afraid to say it too. But like a year later after that, I go to a Tesla Corsa event, and of course, Tesla Corsa, where it's the unplugged performance thing where they put all they let people like test their car on a racetrack. There was a ton of Tesla Model 3 Performance owners there and people that had a reservation for a long time. I couldn't count how many of them were like, oh, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Like, we were all pissed off about that and everything. So yeah, it wasn't like unanimously against me for sure. All right, let's move on from that, because we have a bunch of other news this week that we wanted to discuss. Though kind of related to it, like what Elon Musk is using for the data that he's using to push his perception of the pandemic. That was interesting for him to tweet that this week. Was the chart on supercharger usage. I thought it was interesting data. Why I'm losing it as a segue is because like it keeps talking about cleaning up the data. Of course, it's not good data for the pandemic itself. It's just supercharger usage, but it's still some interesting way to look at it because it looks at basically traffic. All the traffic comes back after restrictions, and you can see here China went down super quick and had a V-shaped recovery. Also relatively quick, though they had also a big slowdown in April because I think some cities initiated other lockdown because they had a resurgence for a while. But now it's back up. you compare that to North America and Europe, our restriction came in about a month later, or even a little bit longer than that, a month and a half maybe. Mm-hmm. The reduction in supercharger usage went down almost as quickly as China, but the recovery is much, much smaller, slower. I mean, it's not a V shape. It's more like a U shape. And right now it looks like a U shape, but it's probably not going to look like that going forward, because I think it's going to be still going to be slower to get back up. Maybe most interesting, the Asia Pacific region, though excluding China, because they put China on its own on the chart, recovered extremely quick and barely had any slowdown, a much smaller slowdown than any other markets, which I'm not exactly sure why. I mean, I know like South Korea recovered super fast, so that might be a reason why. And I know that South Korea, like Tesla had a big boost of sales in South Korea, like over the last year. So they might be like disproportionately representing Asia Pacific here. Because other than China, normally in Asia Pacific, you have Japan, Australia, New Zealand for Tesla, but those are all relatively small market for Tesla. And unless they count Hong Kong. If they do, I'm not sure if they count Hong Kong and China or if it's in Asia Pacific, but there's a lot of Tesla owners in China, so
and specifically in Hong Kong.
Yeah. But my thing too that I'm thinking is like, aside from maybe Australia, New Zealand, places like South Korea, Japan, they might not have that much use of like long distance travel, so the supercharger network might not be used that much to start with. So when the usage goes down, it doesn't appear that obvious. Hmm. Because we're talking here about it's the percentage of the charging session compared to the max, not the max capacity of the network, but the previous top usage.
Yeah, I mean, also there's people who live in the city and use it like a gas station.
Yeah, there's that too.
But it is really interesting, and it's mm-hmm. kind of surprising that the Asia outside of China didn't see any kind of hit at all, it seems like.
Well, at least a little bit, but much not as great as China or the other markets. In other news, Tesla started updating the Model 3's interior to match some of the features found in the Model Y. We know that through Tesla's production in China. Jay in Shanghai posted some picture of the latest cars coming off the line in China, and this one was sent to a showroom. And it shows that Tesla changed the USB ports now to be USB-C in the pack. And in the front, you have now one USB, I assume it's USB 3, like a normal one, and another USB-C port. So they are changing that to match what they did with the Model Y. And they're also making the wireless charging phone charging pad standard on the Model 3. So when the Model Y came out, it was standard with it, and we were like all surprised because why you don't do that with Model 3? And now they're starting to doing it in China, so we assume that that's going to come to the US too.
That's interesting. It's the first kind of China first product we've seen, or you know, upgrade we've seen. Although maybe this wasn't.
Yeah, because there's no production in the U.S.
Maybe
probably.
It's supposed to hit the U.S. already.
Yeah. But it's a good deal. I mean, Tesla charged $130 for the aftermarket installation of, well, not installation, but the product of the wireless pad. So that's really a added value that you get here. Though we do recommend the Jetta pad if you want to use your phone as on landscape, because you cannot do that with the standard one.
Yeah, the Jetta's product's really nice, especially that thing that has the
hub for the charging hub is pretty good too. But I mean, if now it comes standard on Model 3 and Model Y, I mean, I think that's going to be a big hit for those companies that are producing that, because not really worth it to upgrade that thing if you have it come for free. However, if you don't have it already, so if you already have a Model 3 and you're looking for one, I would buy the Jetta before buying the Tesla one, because first of all, it's $25 cheaper. Does pretty much the same thing, but on top of it, you have the landscape capability, which if there's just you in the car, I prefer that.
Yeah. Do we know how much power comes out of USB-C on those things? Is it like a faster charging thing? Do we have any specs on that?
I don't, but that's an interesting question.
I wonder if you can like charge your laptop or something with those.
Hmm. Yeah. That's a lot more power.
Yep.
All right, now let's dive into a report from Reuters this week about the new Tesla battery. They posted that yesterday. And I was digging into it to like try to understand what's like they posted this as a big exclusive, but I was trying to understand like exactly what's the new information in it, because they were repeating a lot of the same thing that we've been reporting for a while about this cheaper battery developed by Tesla and Jeff Donstein in Canada and everything. But a few things that Reuters is claiming that would be new information for us is that, first of all, they said that the new cell is co-developed by CATL, the big Chinese battery manufacturer, and that they would partner with them to produce them too. Okay. They said that the cell will be installed in the Model 3 in China first before going to North America. That also would be new information. They also said that Tesla is planning to use the batteries we're now referring to the million mile battery, as we previously referred to, for second life use in stationary energy storage. So that would be quite a departure from Tesla, because Tesla has been adamant that they don't like the second use battery. They always said that they want to make their own new battery, especially for stationary energy storage, because they think they have different needs in that market. So they want a specific battery for that. And instead of having a second life for car batteries, if they don't, if at the end of their life, they're not good enough to be inside the car, but they could still be good enough to use as a stationary energy storage for power, for an electric utility, for example. Instead of doing that, they always said that they wanted to recycle the batteries. Now, in the report, and that's why I'm a bit skeptical about the report. In the report, they said, but they still plan to use recycling, and they are working through Redwood Materials, which they describe as an affiliate to Tesla, to do the recycling.
It's JB's company, right?
Yeah, that's JB Straubel's company. And both JB and Tesla went on the record and said that the two companies are not related at all. Like, there's no link between them. Like, JB just saw a need for that and decided to start that. And also, the Redwood Materials is not just for batteries. If you look on their website, they want to recycle everything. Like, they want to be like a new, like, they want to develop a ton of technology around, like, facilitating recycling. So that rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, it makes me a little bit more skeptical about the rest of the report. So I don't know. The report also mentioned vehicle to grid. Which that I do believe that Tesla is working on that, so that makes sense to me. But that's about it. That's about the oh, there's a big chunk here. What is that? That's the gist of the report. So, like I said, take it with a grain of salt, because there's some weird things in the report. But I understand it, it's coming from CATL. Like, it's the report is from the same people, Reuters, that reported on Tesla partnering with CATL. But at the time, we all thought it was just a supply contract, which makes more sense to me. So I think this report is also coming from sources within CATL. So I don't know how much they know about Tesla's plans. But there's no doubt that Tesla is working with CATL to a degree.
Yeah, especially in China.
So now, update to the battery day. Some of that doubt is definitely going to be cleared up in battery day, but it's been delayed again. Elon said today that he said, we're going to have to push out the date, or attendance will be very low, maybe do in two parts, webcast next month and in-person event a few months later. So the last we knew about the timing for battery day was third week of May, and Elon mentioned California or Texas. Now he's talking about a webcast in June and an in-person event a few months later, which is kind of a weird way to do an event. I'm a bit surprised, because he already mentioned Texas, and my understanding is, like, Texas right now, they're opening up even like for venues like I've heard like comedy clubs opening and things like that, and you can have events of up to 200 people. So Tesla could already do something, I think.
By the way, I should note the AP just came out with a story that Tesla picks Austin, Tulsa as finalists for new U.S. factory, according to a person briefed on the matter. It just came out from the Associated Press. So,
but they're not saying it's Austin. They're saying it's Austin or Tulsa.
Yeah, it's one of the two, the finalists.
Well, I'm hearing it's Austin, so
yeah.
You can.
It's funny. I wonder if it's related to your.
The time yeah, I feel like that's weird that it's coming out right after my report. But okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe somebody at Tesla was like, "Hey, throw some water on this because we're still negotiating with Texas and trying to get a lower price."
And the report doesn't mention my report.
Of course not.
Of course not. All right. All right. What was I saying? Yeah, so I don't know. But Elon did add to that. He said that there's going to be some things to see in person. So he will really like to have the event with people in the attendance. So I don't know. Like I previously reported that part of the Roadrunner plan and the new battery was to Elon was pushing the team to have a Model S equipped with the battery pack for the event, for the battery pack with the new cells. And show the new capabilities with the new battery pack. So that's definitely something that you would prefer to have people in the attendance to show, though it can also be demonstrated in the webcast, I would guess. And that was before the event was reported, was delayed a few times. So I assume that Tesla has that now. Like the timeline has been pushed so much that I'm sure Tesla can deliver on that. So yeah, now he's probably thinking like, oh yeah, I want the events to have people in the attendance because we have some cool things to show.
Yeah, it was interesting because like why a live event would make, I mean, I feel like Tesla and technology, they can figure out a way to do some VR stuff or whatever that would make it cool. I don't know why you need to be live. Maybe and maybe they're buying time for the agreement with Texas to get signed.
Yeah, that might be it too. All right, my highly anticipated new episode on the Extreme Mileage Model X was out earlier this week.
By the way, did you see the Facebook numbers on that?
No.
It was like 1 million people had seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
people are really like that series. I mean, we're getting good numbers on them. People are excited about them. So keep going. And the next episode is going to be on battery degradation. I think that's something that a lot of people like to know about high mileage cars. So we're going to go deeply into the battery degradation. And there was a battery replacement on that car too. So that's interesting too, because we have two batteries to look into really. But on that episode that I posted this week, it was about the repair and maintenance costs on the vehicle over 400,000 miles. And I went on the focus on the cost too. Like I didn't go into all the warranty replacement because of course that car, not that car is off general warranty, but it's still on the Infinite Mile 8 years powertrain warranty. So a few things were replaced on that front. Without cost, but the overall cost over 400,000 miles was $29,000. That's a big number, and a lot of people were like, that's scary, $29,000. But when you actually look into the numbers more deeply, like it's actually very good. Like, first of all, it's a $100,000 car, so it's a luxury vehicle over 400,000 miles. 400,000 miles is basically the lifetime of most cars. Though a bunch of people brought up this point, and I think it's a fair point, the mileage do affect cars a lot, of course, but time also affects it. So the fact that the car is only 4 years old, that's a positive point for a car too.
And so, it's mostly highway miles as well.
That too, that's a fair point too. But yeah, if we break it down, like over 20 years, that would add the cost to $1,450, which is very good for a luxury vehicle. Over a high mileage. And if you look, I posted the full list too on electric. If you want to go into all the repairs that have been done, all the maintenance has been done. If you look on the first 200,000 miles on the car, the cost was extremely low. So that's a very good encouraging point here.
And a lot of that was tire replacement and stuff like that, which you're going to have to do on every car.
Yes, exactly. So as part of that $29,000, $9,000 was for the tires. So right away, that's the biggest chunk, single chunk. It's $9,000 just for the tires. It headed up to basically 42 tires over 400,000 miles. So that's just over 10 full replacement of tires, because Test Loop ended up replacing the tires, like not four at a time necessarily, but like the ones that were most used. But yeah, so 10 full cycle over, so that's one cycle every 40,000 miles, which is good for an SUV. It's not great for car in general. Like I know some people can push their car to like 60,000 miles, 50,000 miles, but for a large SUV, I think it's good.
Yeah, and particularly a one with great acceleration and a lot of weight.
Yeah, it depends how you use that acceleration. If you're being careful, if you keep the car on chill mode all the time, you probably can push it to 50,000 miles. But I don't do that. I like to have some fun with the car every now and again. Now, for the big tickets items on the car, the biggest one was the middle row seat. So it's that Model X is a six-seater configuration. So you have the back seat that folds back, and you have the two like captain-like seat in the middle. Those two started malfunctioning at about 230,000 miles. So again, we're talking about like deep into the mileage. Also, keep in mind that this car was used by Test Loop as sort of a shuttle service. So a lot of people were getting in the back seat, more maybe than most, like all you would use it over 400,000 miles. But the tilting system and the sliding system on the seat started malfunctioning, and they had to replace them, and that cost almost $5,400. So not cheap. And that's one thing I'm more worried about, because that was replaced at 230,000 miles. Now we are 400,000 miles. Of course, I'm not using the back seat as much as Test Loop would, but at that kind of cost, I'm a little bit worried if it does break again. But yeah, there was a few other replacements that cost that boosted that $29,000 total, like over $3,000 for the MCU replacement. That happened though at 373,000 miles. So my MCU is relatively new on that car. So it happened just last year too. So I'm not too worried about that. Though I do have those yellow bands on the side, but I barely notice those, to be honest. So if I do need a new one, I would probably just go with the MCU upgrades that they offer now, that you get the new, faster, more responsive one. So that could be nice. And that's like $2,500. So I don't know. Like right now, I don't feel like, especially in this financial, economic, current situation, I wouldn't spend like $2,500 just to have a little bit more responsive MCU. But in the future, it's good to know, like, I could just buy that if something happens to my MCU. But yeah, in conclusion, like really, like $29,000, looking very good for this. Next episode, probably coming out late next week. We're going to go down, dive deep into battery degradation. First battery pack, what happened to the first battery pack and how it's standing now, this one. And it's going to be an interesting one too, because this is a Model X 90D. And the 90 kilowatt hour pack for Tesla has notoriously been the worst for battery degradation. So we're looking at the worst case scenario here, basically. Also looking at very high mileage car. Next up, Boring Company in Las Vegas. That was announced this morning. Yesterday morning. It happened, I think, yesterday, like at midnight or something like that. They finished the excavation process of the two tunnels. So a few months ago, we reported on them breaking. They even posted a little video of it, of going to the first, like that right here, breaking through the first wall of the first tunnel. But they had to disassemble the whole boring machine and reassemble it on the other side to do the second hole. And that second hole was completed 2 days ago. So now the excavation process is done. They have two almost mile-long tunnels, and now it's going to be about building the system inside to move the cars and the passenger stations, which they're going to be three of them at the convention center in Las Vegas. And Elon did confirm today that, well, apparently I'm not sure if it's a hopeful statement or if he actually knows something we don't, but the goal of this project was always like, this was a perfect project for the Boring Company. Like the Las Vegas Center, they just want to buy outright the system from them, $52 million. They do the tunnels, they build the system, and then it's owned by the Las Vegas Convention Center. But the hope was always to then convince the city to extend the loop system and the tunnels to the airport and to the strip and to the hotels and everything, and have the Boring Company's loop be a new part of the mass transit of Las Vegas. And now Elon this morning on Twitter was like, "Yeah, that's gonna happen. We're gonna extend to the hotels." So I don't know if he has a deal or not, or if he's just like thinking like this is gonna happen. I think the latter is probably true. I don't think Las Vegas is gonna move forward until at least they prove that it's going to be working fine at the convention center. I think convention centers are like going to be a great test project for them. Look, I mean, that's not fair to the convention center. Like they are paying $52 million to have a real people mover there. They don't want it to be a test project, but ultimately that's going to be that for like a whole city. And if anyone is familiar with Las Vegas, the strip can get pretty busy at times, especially like around like CES and stuff like that. Or anytime there's like a big event at the T-Mobile Arena, the strip gets really busy. So it would be nice to have, like it doesn't have a metro system, that they have a rail, what do you call that? A tramway?
They've got that monorail, yeah.
Yeah, a little monorail thing, but it doesn't, it's not really high capacity. So to have that, and I think Las Vegas is the perfect city to start with because it could be fairly simple. You could do like convention center to the strip to the airport, and the airport is pretty damn close to the strip. And then you could just do that. You could like the city could pay for doing it from the convention center to the airport, going through the strip, and then you could have all the big hotels go like, do you want a station at your hotel? And then you can have the hotel pay for the tunnel from the main tunnels to the hotel and everything. And that could basically serve as a giant system throughout Vegas. I think that would be perfect.
Yeah, unless you're an Uber driver.
Yep, maybe. But I felt like the strip is not that long too. Like every time I'm in Vegas, I end up walking the strip a lot too. Like I don't get Ubers that much. You mainly go to Vegas for the convention center, for CES and things like that. And the convention center is a little bit outside the strip. So if you then have to go to a specific hotel on the strip, then yes, it makes sense to take
Uber. I actually end up taking the monorail quite a bit because the last couple times I've stayed at that hotel that's just one north of the, or two north of the convention center. So just hop on there, go to the convention center, and then go take it again to like whatever hotel's nearest the hotel I'm trying to get to, and then walk a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fairly walkable city. Last time I went there, I stayed at the Palms, though that's completely outside the strip, and I did end up using Ubers a lot.
Yeah, if you're off strip, you gotta do something.
Yeah. Last news that came out this morning that we're going to talk about. So if you have questions, make sure to put them in the comment section on the live stream, and we're going to get to them after that. But let's dive in. Ford announcing this morning that he just figured out that the Mustang Mach-E charges 30% faster than they thought. So apparently they've been doing a lot of testing lately, and they realized that, you know what? We can push the Mach-E's charging capacity 30% faster. However, if you look at the actual release, which I did, and to be fair to Ford, I mean, a lot of people, it's hard to talk about charging in terms of specs. Like, what automakers should do is really like release their average charging session, what it would look like, and release the full charging cycle. That would be the only way to have like actual like good data, because everyone is just talking like they talk
theoretical,
like top. Charge rate capacity. Okay, that's nice. Like Tesla is good on that. 250 kilowatts on the Model 3 and Model Y. That's great. But that doesn't tell the whole story. You want to know like that. You want to know like 10%, 20% to 80%, things like that. How much time that takes, and if you do achieve a top charge rates on that, how long the charge rate lasts. So the way that Ford presented this new data about faster charging was they think that now they can achieve 61 miles of range in approximately 10 minutes on a Defy America DC fast charging station, which are 150 kilowatts. So that's up for that's 14 miles more than what they previously thought they could get in 10 minutes. I think the best data that they did release was saying instead that they can go from 10% to 80% in 45 minutes. What that tells me...
That's a real-world use.
Yeah, that's a closer to real-world use on average. And that's for the extended range battery pack, which I think we know is like 98 kilowatt hour of capacity.
So yeah, I don't know if that all that's usable, but yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. But if we assume that's fully usable, 98 kilowatt hour, if you do the math, it adds up to around 90 kilowatts of average charging, which is good. Like people say, it's not like 250 from Tesla. Yes, but Tesla, it's 250 from like 10 to 15% for 5 minutes. Like it's not, you cannot just look at that. You have to look at how long it goes. And if it averaged 90%, 90 kilowatts, it probably hits 150 kilowatts for a little while there and then average down for a while. So maybe
we should come up with an average, like a spec, like go from 20% to 80%. Tell us how fast that happens.
Yeah.
And then that's the charging. Cause that's,
new standard for advertising and like for talking about charging.
Right. Because you don't pull into a supercharger or a DC fast charger at 1%, hopefully.
Not even 10%. I think 10%, like on average, I think most people come like 15, 20%, I think.
Right. Right. That's safe. Mm. And then you don't want to fill up all the way because that last little bit takes forever.
Yeah.
So, 80% is where it like really tapers off usually.
Yeah, I think we should be pushing that. Like I have manufacturers talk about their charging capacity.
2080.
Yeah, 2080. Give us the time that it takes there. Give us the time. But ideally, you would do what Audi has been good at doing, that just posting the whole charging cycle and everything. That I like. That I can get behind that.
Yep.
All right. Should we go to the questions?
Yep. All right. And there's quite a bit of talk today.
Yeah.
All right. Haters gonna hate. Yeah. Wait a minute. I don't think I can scroll up. Yeah, I can only go to 420. Huh. I think there's so many comments that we can't scroll.
Okay.
All right.
So sorry. So we lost some of the first few questions that you guys.
Sorry, guys.
Asked. Sorry.
I guess we can go back on YouTube and look. But yeah. And then unfortunately, this is right in the middle of all the haters group. So
look at that comment here. Like analyze that comment. Criticism of Elon is futile.
Futile, boys and girls.
That's saying that we shouldn't criticize him because it's not going to do anything. Like first of all, that's false. It's proven that Elon has responded positively to constructive criticism in the past. So no, like the comments makes no sense to start with. And this is the whole my whole point of the super fandom problem. Thinking that we cannot criticize him unless it doesn't do anything, which is false.
And this person thinks he's infallible. So
yeah,
we're not going to be able to argue with him. So
Coach D,
he's responsible. Yeah, he's responsible for his own actions. That's bull. F. Chow, there are a bunch of folks who seem to do nothing in life except follow Elon around. Thank you for not being super fans. The world needs objective reporting. That's
appreciate
Justin
that.
Fisher. Yep, appreciate it. Agree. Gauk Wapanzi, Fred, crazy fans. Be careful.
Yeah, I call them crazy fans. All right, I do agree, Gook, that for crazy is not crazy is diminishing a little bit. So I admit, like,
and
unreasonable Smith's fan though. I should use
right. Yeah, and we as we said, we're probably the biggest fans out there, and we think we're doing a service by calling out the missteps.
Right, yeah, John Smith. That was my big point in my article. It was coming from a place of love. I mean this to improve Elon, improve on Tesla, and try to decorrupt this feedback loop that was so useful.
All right. So John Smith says, objective reporting is what? Disagreeing with Elon about reopening? I kind of missed the point there.
Yeah. I'm not even disagreeing about reopening. I'm just disagreeing on the way you went about it.
Elon is responsible for a lot of stuff. If match his accomplishment, then you can talk.
Okay. Oh, wow. So because he's great, he's done some great things. He's only going to do great things in the future, and he's perfect. That's like, it doesn't work like that. Like
Ryan Pennington, and we're talking about the congresswoman, I think congresswoman, who said F Elon. Why would a progressive take oil and gas money? What a weird counter-argument. I thought we talked about it.
Yeah, the politician, that's a big part of their job. They're just trying to get contribution all the time. They'll take it whenever they can. And those oil companies and every big companies, they have entire departments just to give out contribution like that and in order to try to get favor for sure. Like, there's no, that's how politics work.
But we should note that like people like Bernie Sanders and those folks don't take any oil money.
So yeah, so some of them don't. Yeah, for sure.
They're not true progressives, and that's what Ryan's point is, I guess. So Mo says $20,000 will buy a lot of toilet paper.
I assume, yeah.
Yeah.
Though it's hard to find nowadays.
Yeah.
If you can find $20,000 worth of toilet paper.
If you have enough people to do disinformation, Tesla Q, shorts, entire oil industry, then don't be too surprised when fans react to criticism that sounds like short oil show misinformation.
Yeah, well, that was part of the article too. Like, I understand where it's coming from. I understand it's a counterbalance, but it can go too far in the counterbalance. And now we were just, the super fans are going down to the levels of the shorts and the misinformation department, which is not a good thing. That's part of what needs to be rectified.
Yeah. Spikes 43 says Tesla has benefited massively from government incentives and should be a good citizen. Look at the sales around phase out ladder. I don't think the sales dropped too much on the phase out because Tesla did drop as well, but I agree, like, you know, the government has helped Tesla quite a bit, so they should probably play a little bit nicer. And we're already seeing, I just saw a tweet, California Employment Training Panel just denied SpaceX more than $600,000 in training funds. The concern was low wages, treatment of employees, and Musk's threat to leave the state. So
yeah,
he's already lost $600,000 with the tweets, and he's already $40 million down from the SEC fines on tweeting. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he can point to a past history of success there. Objective reporting is listening to all sides of the story. Elon superfans only report one perspective. That's true. Thank you. So we get a lot of chit chat back and forth. John Smith, I'm over this shelter in place. Yeah, I'm kind of over it too, but
yeah, everyone is, like, no one wants to do it,
but you know, like, let's try to stay as safe as possible. Julio's back. Opinions have to look at the whole context of the actions versus just looking at one aspect. I think that's true.
Yeah.
All right.
I think, like I said, I wasn't necessarily defending her. I was defending her on the misrepresentation of her as an oil shill. I don't think there's any proof of that. Her voting record is pro-regulation of the oil industries, and she's even like endorsed by the Sierra Club, which never known to endorse oil shill, really. So no, I don't like. I'm not defending. I'm defending that. I'm not defending a comment to say "f you" to Elon. I don't.
I hadn't heard of her before this. Had you?
No.
Yeah. So I have no past with her. All right, we're getting a lot of chit chat. X says, "I agree with F Chow. No reason Tesla followers need to be as biased as Trump followers, not a good position to take." There is that comparison to make. It does feel a little bit like the Trump model, which is really unfortunate. I totally agree with you, Fred, from F. Chow. And then, thank you. All right, let's get some more. Lorena should have never taken the high road versus acting like a usual politician, I guess. Gook Waponzi says, "I used to be a fan of unions 30 or so years ago. Now they run like the mafia. So much corruption coming out of unions in the last
10 years. The unions weren't run like the mafia 30 years ago. I feel like they were more run like the mafia 30 years ago.
I feel like it was actually the mafia.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
Like he's buried somewhere. I don't know. if he wants the Bachelor, fine, but don't lump us all in together.
Did I do that?
No, I don't know.
No.
One of the reasons I feel so jarred by superfans is that they remind me of fanaticism in the government. Scary.
Yeah, it's tribal thinking. It's us versus them. So Republican versus Democrats and liberals versus conservatives. So same thing, huh?
Yeah. Spike 43, it's known exactly what the county wanted specifically that was going to take another week to open. I think it later came out that specifically there was some things that the county wanted and frankly Tesla needed to provide.
Yeah, what really convinced me, you want to know what? I should post about that too. Did you see the Q&A that they posted?
Yes, that was really good.
Yeah, the Q&A that they posted, like it makes them look extremely reasonable. They were looking at specific things that Tesla didn't have the solution for just yet, and they were like, put the solution in place and we're going to let you reopen by May 18. And then the whole debacle started with Elon quitting the state and whatnot. Arrest me and everything.
All right, a lot of chit-chat. Gally Russell is very objective analysis.
Well, not like completely objective. I mean, he's a Tesla shareholder and he's extremely pro-Tesla. I'm not saying that he lies about it, but I'm biased. He's biased. Everyone is biased. So let's
I like Gally a lot.
Yeah, I like him too.
A great guy. I would not call him objective.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Cowards and South Americans. Will he support Electrek this week? Fred is unfairly treated by the Twitter community.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Appreciate the comment, Daniel. But I want to point out, though, like on Twitter, I also got a ton of very good feedback about the article and everything. The sort of these super fans of the Tesla Third Wheel podcast and everything, they sort of took ownership of the Tesla Twitter community, if you will. They think they are the Tesla Twitter community. I wouldn't go as far. It's just they certainly tweet a lot more than anybody else. Like they send hundreds of tweets a day. It's insane. But I think there's a lot of reasonable people on Twitter too, on the Tesla Twitter. Let's call it that.
All right. We should put our criticisms toward BMW, Ford, Rivian.
Why? I really don't like this Giulio guy. Like, thanks for watching, dude. But I don't appreciate. Like, why?
Why Rivian?
Yeah, I mean, why Rivian? They're fine. And BMW has been doing some good stuff lately with electric cars. In the past, I admit that they've been quite slow. And Ford in the U.S., I would bet on them a lot before betting on GM or Chrysler for electric vehicles. So let's welcome those other electric vehicles. That's another thing of the super Tesla fandom that don't like bashing other electric vehicles because of it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, theoretically, Elon has always been like pro EVs, and this super fandom has gotten so bad that they view other EVs as the enemy versus, you know, the oil industry, which I can get on board with that being the enemy.
Yeah.
How feasible is having production up in Austin is for the end of the year? Seems like a stretch. Does this mean that Giga Nevada will never be expanded as previously expected, I think? Where will the semi be built? All good questions.
Yeah, well, we discussed, like, Austin, it's general assembly only, so is it feasible? Probably, but extremely aggressive timeline nonetheless. Nevada, I think they're still being expanded. It's just, I think they have some limitation on how they can work with Panasonic and everything. And last we heard, Tesla Semi is going to be built there, but it's not 100% confirmed.
People talk trash when Tesla, we were trying to get Model 3 out. That was misplaced as well.
Sure. Okay.
Somebody disagrees but with Fred often, but 100% right here. Rooting for Rivian. We're all rooting for Rivian, I think, except Julio.
Well, Julio is only talking about Elon Musk company right now, barring company Neuralink and everything.
All right, so let me try to find longer comments because when you really care about somebody, you can be honest with them. So I tweeted a little bit ago that the saddest part is that nobody in Elon's circle is like of friends and family is saying, dude, you're not doing yourself a service. Like, I get where it's coming from. I understand. You just need to like think long term, like how are these tweets going to affect your companies and your brand and people relying on you. So sad that didn't. Sandy Monroe gives his approval. I don't know.
Oh, I think we can skip like Julio's comments by now. Like, right.
Well, we want to take both sides here. So.
Yeah, but I mean, it's proven to be a bit unreasonable.
All right. Mario Yo says, I think the Model 3 performance issue for most people was that in the past, Fred told owners to suck it up because the prices and features change all the time, but this time it impacted him.
That's,
so you can address that.
Yeah, I understand where that's coming from, but that's a misperception of the... There, not all price changes are bad. Not all price changes are equal. The specific problem with that price change, it wasn't due to a change in it. Like, a lot of the time, Tesla justified their price changes for, like, upgrades, new equipment, and things like that. And that's what a lot of the price changes hate on Tesla came from in the past before that specific time. Tesla will launch a new version of the Model S and it's going to be cheaper, whatever. Just change it to it. There's better performance. And people will be, hey, what the hell? I just bought my car and now there's something different on it. And this price change or something. The thing that was different with that price change is that there was no changes to the actual car. Actually, they tried to fake a change by debundling that performance package things and like, oh, now you don't need to buy the performance package. Now it's within the car and it costs like the $5,000 that it costs. It's not there anymore. So they tried to do that, but it was just on the configuration that it changed. Nothing actually changed on the car. The car was the same. So what happened instead is that Tesla used all that demand that they had from years of reservation on the Model 3 performance to they didn't have to create demand for the car. So they start production, they deliver the cars that they had in backlog, and as soon as they don't have the backlog, now it's like, oh, the orders for the Model 3 performance are not that high. We need to reduce the price to get more orders. But they changed nothing to the car. So the only reason why that car was more expensive at first during the 2 months that they first started, it was because they had the backlog. So if your reason for the price to be higher is because people had the reservation for it for a long time, that's not a good reason enough to charge them more money. That's my problem with it. Same thing happened with the iPhone at first, and Steve Jobs did the same thing that Elon did. It was like, yeah, I admit that's not the right way to treat the people that had were waiting for the phone for a long time. In this case, for the Model 3 performance, so they issue refunds. The same thing happened. It's not all price change are equal.
Yeah. All right, Eric Forever. Most people here support Tesla's goals, but many of us, we are disgusted and disappointed by Elon's Trump-like posturing. I think that that's, we can agree with that. And the conversation going back and forth. Also, Elon's threats to leave Fremont is so horribly disloyal. I question the sanity of anyone who'd defend it. First of all, I don't think Elon's threatening to leave Fremont. I think they'll keep the car factory there.
He did say something for that sounded like he could move Fremont if he wanted to.
Right. It was kind of like, we'd even go that far.
Yeah. It wasn't as clear as the HQ threat at the headquarters, but there was something of the sort. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there might be a huge tax advantage to move headquarters to Texas. That might be like something that they've already been mulling over.
Oh, that's an interesting tweet. Question from comment from Da Vinci here.
I, for one, Fred, should ignore the Twitter haters and not be so vindictive about it. People get attacked by idiots on Twitter all the time. Imagine if everybody reacted like Fred.
That's not the point. That's not the point at all. Like, I'm not reacting to Twitter hate. I'm pointing out that the situation with Tesla Superfan on Twitter right now is corrupting Elon's feedback loop, and it's part of the problem that we just read a bunch of comments about how people don't like Elon's current state of mind and what he's saying, and I think that's part of the problem because those people are reinforcing it. I'm not vindictive about it. I don't care if like insult me. All I wanted to do is man up about it. I don't like when people do it anonymously because I know who's behind it and he's trying to do it anonymously. So that's kind of cowardly. But I'm not vindictive about it. If they were just to come out and apologize for it, I'm like, all right, that's cool. We can be friends. I don't care.
All right, I'm trying to get through these because we're already 20 minutes after.
Oh boy, you're right.
maybe in third world countries in Australia, using the Tesla as a power wall is a good thing. I'm not sure where that came from.
Well, I mean, he's right that the economics for the power wall are a lot better in Australia, but other than that.
Yeah. All right. Vehicles, Greg. Yeah. I mean, I think people are having their own conversations down here. Maybe we should be more specific about it.
We should ask people to do like a question and then so we can just go to the comments with the questions in there instead of.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to.
Yeah, we should do that next time.
All right. Well, that's it then.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. We appreciate it. A lot of comments this week. We appreciate your time here. I know that everyone is trying to entertain themselves during the quarantine, and we appreciate that you chose us for however long that lasted, an hour and a half or something. So thanks a lot. Stay safe out there. We're going to be back here same time next week. So subscribe if you want to know more. We have a bunch of videos coming too, so you can always subscribe to YouTube or subscribe to your podcast app for the Electric Podcast. I appreciate that too. You can leave us a thumbs up on YouTube. You can leave us a review on your podcast app. That's always helpful too. So we're going to see you same time, same place next week. Have a good one.